live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports. Now, here's your host, Matt Kolsky.
Come on!
Hello, and a happy Friday. It is pre-dawn. It is the pregame show. I'm Matt Kolsky. The nice guy, Steven, on the ones and twos. We'll get to him later. Because it's Friday, and that means first segment, we have something else to get to.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Yes. Pop quiz back to its regularly scheduled schedule. Regularly scheduled schedule. That means I ask four questions. You call, text, or tweet your answers to those four questions. The leaderboard is hot right now. BR Cracker's still up there. Got a Mike in Petaluma near the top. Somewhere around four or five people are going to get prizes out of this thing, I promise. Speaking of which, Stephen, remind me to send an email to somebody about starting the wheels moving on those fabulous prizes.
Will do.
Thank you. So, it's gotten grim, of course, in the Bay Area National Football League season. But call me crazy. I might be crazy, but call me crazy because these two teams that they're playing, both the Raiders and Niners, are playing teams that have looked at various points in this season very good and like playoff teams at various points in the season. Here's the good news. Both of them come into town pretty injured, which might be the slight cracking of the door that one of these Bay Area squads needs to get a victory. I don't know if you want a victory. I mean, I think probably you don't, really. If I can tell you what you want, Raider fan and Niner fan, it's not a victory. Although I realize some of you don't like to think that way. What you want is the highest draft pick possible. And to that end, a clever 919 texter has already said the preemptive pop quiz answers no, 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 and no, assuming that I'm going to ask things like, can the Raiders defense slow down Antonio Brown, right? That is not one of the questions, though. I don't like to make it that easy for you. But look, if you're talking Raiders-Steelers, James Conner is out. Steelers have lost back-to-back games. And frankly, the Steelers have had some trouble historically in Oakland. As someone pointed out at some point this week on the text line, you like my specificity there? Some dude or chick on the text line at some point earlier in this week said something like, hey man, Steelers and Raiders are a long-time, highly contested rivalry. Okay, great. So rivalry football in Oakland, and obviously, the Steelers look like the much better team. I mean, I'm not trying to sell you a bill of goods here. I'm not going to mince words about the favorite in this game. But it does seem like the doors open a little bit since the Steelers have no running game and haven't played well lately. And the key, as usual, for the Raiders is going to be to get enough defense that their offense can compete. But if we're talking defense, the Steelers have not been particularly great the last couple weeks. In losses to the Chargers and Broncos, giving up 33 and 24 points, the Raiders should have a chance to score. And if they can shut down a running attack that literally has basically no one you've ever heard of carrying the ball this week, the top two running backs for the Steelers are Steven Ridley and Jalen Samuels, who also plays tight end. I mean, that certainly seems to give you an opportunity to score with the Steelers. And as the 707 texter just said, I'm a Raiders fan. I don't want them to win. I just want them to have a competitive game. And I think you could get that. By the same token, the Broncos have actually been very good lately. Quite good. The difference here is they have lost serious contributors to injury coming in specifically to this week, namely Chris Harris, their best corner, and Emmanuel Sanders, their best wide receiver, because they already traded away their other legit wide receiver in Demaryius Thomas, and Emmanuel Sanders going out with the Achilles injury. Look, Case Keenum's not a good quarterback. I mean, he's a fine quarterback. I was looking for a name there. Case Keenum's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. Without receiving help, yeah, he may not be very good. And as far as Niners pass attack goes, obviously the big issue is dealing with the pressure that Denver brings, because they do that. And they will attack Nick Mullins. There's no question about it. And Nick Mullins has not exactly been Tom Brady against the blitz or against pressure. So I'm not saying the Niners or Raiders are favorites. What I'm saying is injuries have opened the door to what at least hopefully will be reasonably competitive football. That's what I'm saying. But back to what you're all waiting for.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
As usual, all you got to do is listen for my four questions, and then you weigh in on the text line, Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. On the phones, 888-957-9570. Or you can tweet at the Kolsky, KOLSKY, or at pregame show 957. So, pop quiz questions. In a pop quiz where relatively major injuries for the opponents could make these games kind of interesting, let's start Raiders and Steelers. No James Conner, as I said, the running back who took the place of Le'Veon Bell this year and frankly was very good for much of the year. No other accomplished runner on the roster. It's Jalen Samuels and Stephen Ridley to the rescue. So I ask, since, look, the pass game is going to kill you. Good luck with Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. That's going to be a problem. So you're going to have to really shut down the run to compete in this game if you're the Raiders. I'm setting the over-under at 70 for the entire Steelers team. Can you hold them under 70 yards rushing? Because if I've never heard of... I've heard of Stephen Ridley, former Patriot. I've heard of Jalen Samuels coming into the year, potential slash running back tight end. I've heard of them. But also, come on, we've really never heard of these guys. If you can't hold those two dudes under 70 yards, it's going to be ugly. Second question, Derek Carr has really been very good. 7 weeks without an interception, and that's despite being under constant assault from opponents' pass rushers. Can he get an eighth week without an interception? Simple as that. Can the clean sheet continue for Derek Carr, if you'll allow me to use a football term for my football pop quiz? Thank you. I'll be here all week, which is 52 more minutes. Those are your Raider questions. Number one, can they hold the Steelers' rushing attack under 70? Number two, can Carr keep the clean sheet rolling? Niners Broncos for questions three and four. And I mentioned the injuries on the Denver side. Chris Harris and Emmanuel Sanders in particular are significant. I did not mention the injury, most notable one, on the Niners side, which is Matt Breida being out. Pierre Garçon also out. That means somebody besides George Kittle has got to step up on this Niners offense. And I don't mean the quarterback. He is what he is. But you're going to have another skill position player step up. So my question is kind of a weird one, pop quiz-wise. I'm giving you a multiple-choice question. Who is going to end up with the most yards from scrimmage on Sunday between the next three skill position players on the Niners offense, who in my mind this week are Marquise Goodwin, coming back from missing a couple weeks with personal issues, Dante Pettis, coming off his biggest game of his young NFL career, or Jeff Wilson, the rookie who has looked really good carrying the ball, just like pretty much every running back in a Shanahan system looks pretty good. So who will end up with more yards from scrimmage between Marquise Goodwin, Dante Pettis, and Jeff Wilson? Because somebody's got to do something besides George Kittle to get the Niners offense going. And then question four, this is probably a question you anticipated, because especially with Emmanuel Sanders out, there's one thing you have to do to take care of the Denver Broncos, and it is contain the man who might have the best hair in the entire National Football League and has certainly had, well, I can't say that anymore after Derrick Henry last night. But before Derrick Henry last night, had had probably the best couple weeks of any runner in the NFL the last 2 weeks. And that is Philip Lindsay, young Philip Lindsay, 267 yards combined in the last 2 weeks, averaging over 8 yards per carry as he did it. Niners last week crushed by a Seahawks run game that is not nearly that good. 168 yards for Seattle last week. So can the Niners hold Philip Lindsay under 100? That seems like a modest goal. It's been tough to do. He is having a tremendous season. Really came out of nowhere. So there it is. Four questions. Your answers via the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. The phone lines at 888-957-9570, where Stephen will take your answers. We will not take them on the air today.
Got a fun fact about Philip Lindsay. You know he lives with his parents?
That's awesome.
He's 24 years old. Do you think that helps at all?
I bet it doesn't hurt. I mean, I don't know Philip Lindsay's parents, but I bet it curtails, or at least like somewhat curbs shenanigans.
I think it helps him at least just focus on only football, and that's it, instead of other things that can...
Plus, who doesn't want mom cooking dinner when you get home from a hard practice?
100%.
I'm into it. I'm cool with it. 24. Heck, I mean, let's see.
He was undrafted, so it wasn't.
I went back and
lived
with my parents later than that. In my age, after age 24.
So, I've had long time roommates now. They're not parents.
Yeah. What show is that where is a character who always refers to his roommates and he's talking about his parents? Am I just thinking of Your Life? Yeah, must be. All right, one more time. Here are your pop quiz questions. Call in 888-957-9570. Text in the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795, or tweet me at the Kolsky, or the show in general at Pregame Show 957. Here they are. Question one. Can the Raiders hold the Steelers' rushing attack under 70 yards? All their rushing yards under 70. Question two, can Derek Carr keep up the clean sheet? Can he make it 8 weeks without an interception? Question three, jumping over to Niners, it's Grandma's Boy. Thank you to the text line. Grandma's Boy is the movie that I was thinking of, one of my favorite films, and it is... Nick Swartzen's character, now that I remember the movie, it is Nick Swartzen's character who refers to his roommates, who are his parents. Thank you to the text line. I know anytime I need help with a movie reference, you will always come through. Question three on the pop quiz is, without Matt Breida or Pierre Garçon, not that the second one is particularly damaging, somebody besides George Kittle's got to get involved on the Niners offense, so who will it be? Who will have more yards from scrimmage from the trio of Marquise Goodwin, Dante Pettis, and Jeff Wilson? And finally, question four, can the Niners control Philip Lindsay? With Thomas traded out of town, with Sanders injured, Philip Lindsay is the Broncos' offense. Can the Niners hold him under 100 yards? Give us your pop quiz answers. I'll repeat the questions later in the show. But coming up next, a bigger game than either of these football games for two teams well out of the running is tonight's action in Milwaukee, where hopefully...
The Warriors did a great job.
I can only hope, and hopefully not.
Tenacupo! Oh, he caught a body!
Okay.
Oh, he caught a body!
Don't want to see any bodies caught by Giannis tonight. We're going to get into this matchup, a rematch of one of the Warriors' worst games of the year. They're in Milwaukee tonight, potential finals preview? Just saying. Could be interesting. I'm Matt Kolsky. This is the pregame show.
Last time they met, it wasn't pretty for the Warriors.
Adekupo just barrels over Looney and dunked it with a right hand. Just ran him over.
Now, the Dubs are out for revenge.
Throws outside to Iguodala.
Warriors.
Curry gets it back right side.
Box.
Quick release and a splash for Curry.
Coverage starts today at 5. Tip-off at 6:30. Only on 95.7. The Game. Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Matt Kolsky.
Is this from the new album, though, Steve? Okay, this is just one of the singles I heard ahead of time. You could have given me some new stuff. You couldn't give me one of the songs that wasn't a pre-release? This is Wolfpack. Steven and I already had a conversation about Wolfpack's new album coming out today. Have you ever seen Wolfpack live, Steven?
No, I have not.
Would recommend. 5 stars. It's just a little funky funk jam. They switch instruments and stuff. They're just a bunch of really talented session musicians that play goofy little funky jams.
And they got famous off Facebook, didn't they? They started making Facebook videos. I think that's how they got famous in England, at least.
I think so, although I would say famous is a stretch. Speaking of which, the pregame show, where famous is certainly a stretch.
Popular.
Presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with product experts. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for dates and more information. goldenstatelumber.com. Check them out. Many locations, many wonderful people to help you. Pop quiz will circle back around. We'll get to those questions again if you missed out. Otherwise, feel free to keep texting and tweeting and even calling in your answers. But also, going to switch over to Warren. Did you notice my shirt today, by the way, Steven? You see this? You can't see it. Hold on. Let me stand up. That's me moving the mic. I went to theringer.com and ordered myself a Claytheism shirt because, after all, I'm a Claytheist.
Claytheism, the movement that has taken the NBA by storm.
And I'm wearing it today because I feel like Clay needs me today after a 9 for 15 was good. He was the only guy who did show up against the Bucks last time around. And I want to just sort of look back at that game as an indicator for what we could see tonight. Because, like I said, I think this really is a bigger than usual regular season game. The Warriors don't have a lot of those. And even when they do, there's only so much it means. This is not the full strength Warriors. Draymond Green remains out. And ultimately, even if they were full strength, it's never the playoff Warriors till the playoffs. So it's not that an 0-2 record against Milwaukee would make me think Milwaukee is the favorites now to win the title or something crazy like that. It's just that you'd like to get a win against one of the teams you could face in June or July, whenever they do the final, August, whenever they get to the NBA finals these days. But also, this is a team that's given the Warriors trouble throughout the Giannis era. And there's a few teams like that, that even when they haven't been one of the other best teams in the league, they've given the Warriors trouble. The Celtics fall into that category. And now that the Bucks are well-coached and are playing as well as they have been, with Giannis just at an unbelievable level.
Holy cottabody!
I think you do. You want to prove something. You want to go into their house and say, yeah, you came to our place and got us, but don't forget who we are. So I do think this is a big game, and especially because it was a bad loss. They took a bad loss in that game. And Steph Curry was there. As I said yesterday, as I said at the time, we didn't even notice live at the game. We didn't notice he was hurt because they were losing by so much that it wasn't surprising he didn't come back into the game. So how did that happen was what I wanted to try to figure out. And I was there for that game, courtside actually, so I have a pretty good memory of the game itself. And I dug into the stats a little bit, and it's pretty clear how it happened. There's a couple of things. For one, it was Eric Bledsoe and Malcolm Brogdon who dominated the Warriors. It was the backcourt, not Giannis, Chris Middleton was fine. Got off to a hot start and then basically didn't make another shot after the first quarter. Giannis, look, he's unbelievable. And it's a statement of how unbelievable he is that after a 24.9 rebound, 4 assists, 2 steal, 2 block game, I'm talking about how it was fine. Because that's what it is. 7 for 16 from the field, 24 points for this guy is just fine. He's going to hurt you somehow. A couple of nasty blocks in that game, too. But at the end of the day, if he's 7 for 16, you feel pretty good about the way you defended him. The problem is Bledsoe and Brogdon, a backcourt that is more physical and tough than it is talented or skilled, was 19 for 26, 46 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists between the two of them. Oh, and 3 steals. And in particular, it was Eric Bledsoe just physically imposing his will on the Warriors and making things really tough for Steph Curry on the other end, where Steph was 5 for 14, 0 for 4 from 3 before he went out with an injury. So that physicality of dealing with the Bucks backcourt is a huge factor tonight, and especially with Steph relatively recently coming off an injury. Eric Bledsoe is a challenge, and even if they switch him on to Brogdon, that's a much bigger, more physical player. Perhaps the most telling statistic from that game against the Bucks is that the Warriors allowed 84 points in the paint. 84 points in the paint. 42 of 60 shooting in the paint for the Milwaukee Bucks. 42 of 60. I mean, that's insane. It's insane. That's like 70% shooting. And it's the paint, so that's not totally shocking. But to compare, the Warriors in that game were 17 of 31 for 34 points in the paint. So the Warriors took 31 paint shots and missed 14 of them. The Bucks took 60 and missed 18 of them. They dominated the paint in that game. And Damian Jones was there for that game. Damian Jones actually played well in that game, was one of the better Warriors. So, and by the way, it's not a center. Because ironically, although the Bucks dominated the paint in that game, it was actually Brooke Lopez is nowhere near the paint. And in fact, Brooke Lopez barely goes in the paint this year at all. I have this written down somewhere. Where'd it go? Brooke Lopez, I think it's 70% of his shots have come from the three-point line this year. Virtually, yeah, here we go. 6.7 of his 9.3 shots per game coming from distance for the 1 7-footer, well, Giannis too. But for the center, the only real center on the Bucks roster, the vast majority of his shots are from the exterior of the court. So the guys dominating the paint are Giannis, it's Eric Bledsoe, it's John Henson. And in that game, in Oracle, it was Pat Connaughton. So what do you learn from this? It's not that the Warriors' bigs are getting beat in the paint. It's that the Warriors' everyone else is getting beat in the paint. Because, again, 1 through 4, the Bucks just have a more physical basketball team than the Warriors do. So the answer, I mean, the biggest answers are the same big answers we always talk about for the Warriors. Number one, defense. Number two, turnovers. Warriors allowed the Bucks to shoot 51.5% from the field in that game. Warriors turned it over 18 times for 23 points for the Bucks in that game. And those are the differences. Those are the differences. Yes, it was an uneven offensive performance in that Steph and KD didn't shoot it well. Neither of them did. But the bench was pretty good offensively. Damian Jones had 12 on 6 of 8. Quinn Cook had 15 on 6 of 9. A lot of 2 for 3 shooting performances from lesser bench players. So the offense overall was pretty good, despite the bad shooting from the stars, besides Clay. The problem was the defense wasn't good enough, and there were too many turnovers. And at the end of the day, the Bucks ended up with those 84 paint points I talked about, plus 20 fast break points to just 4 for the Warriors, and 20 second chance points to just 12 for the Warriors. And that's all that same stuff. It's not playing good enough defense overall, particularly not being physical enough with guards and forwards driving and scoring in the paint. And it's turning the ball over too much, which in addition to questionable defense, contributes to those fast break points. So as far as it goes tonight in Milwaukee, that to me is the biggest stuff. And that, I think, is why it's particularly tough without your best defender and most physical player in Draymond Green. So it's going to be on Kevon Looney and frankly, even on Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant to bring some physicality to this game and take it to the Bucks a little bit. And if you do that, you cut down the turnovers and you play some defense. Look, the Warriors are still the better team. Even without Draymond, I think they have the better roster. And I expect them to get it together. I expect them to show up motivated and get a win tonight in Milwaukee. I want us to get wins around here. And that's why we occasionally bring in Nice Guy Steven to catch us up on the news we have not been paying enough attention to. We bring Steven in for all the best from the world of sports. Right after this. I'm Matt Kolsky. This is the pregame show.
Hey, someone, please take our money.
Steve Kerr has led the Warriors to face the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals every season he's been a head coach for the Golden State Warriors. True or false? That's true. It's true. It's true.
You could win $1,300 on Warriors Trivia Takedown. Tonight at 520, only on 95.7. The Game.
Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Matt Kolsky.
We are back. A couple of follow-up things on the Warriors I want to quickly answer before we get to Nice Guy Stevens' feature performance. 510 texter saying this is not necessarily relevant to what you're talking about, but just curious, is Patrick McCaw even on the Warriors today or even in the NBA? It's complicated. I believe the facts on the ground with Patrick McCaw are that he is officially, what's the right way to say this? His rights are owned by the Warriors. So he can't simply go sign anywhere. I think he could get an offer. I think he's a restricted free agent, technically. But either way, he would have something has to happen. The Warriors either have to, he has to show up or they would have to trade him, I believe. But right now, he has not signed the qualifying offer that's sort of just a part of doing business that you offered to a guy, so he is not technically on the roster. So there's your answer. He's essentially not in the NBA, but the Warriors still own his rights. And frankly, I have no idea what he's thinking or planning to do. Also, a 408 texter asking or saying, and I think this is good advice for Warriors fans, whenever I get mad at the Warriors, I just look at the Rockets record. I think that's good advice. I think you should do that. Warriors record, a lot better than the Rockets record right now. And frankly, if you look at all the teams in between the Warriors and Rockets, none of them look like this year's Rockets, if that makes sense. I mean, yes, the Warriors are technically in fourth right now, but they have as many wins as anybody in the West anyway. They're just a couple extra losses. So they're two back in the loss column from the Nuggets who are up top. But you know, you look at all these teams, Nuggets, Thunder, Clippers, Lakers, Grizzlies, Blazers, Mavericks, Kings, Timberwolves, Jazz, Pelicans. All of those teams are ahead of the Rockets, by the way. See, it does make you feel better to look at the Rockets record. But none of those teams look to me like they'll be able to keep pace with the Warriors once the Warriors get going. And I think they will pretty much as soon as Draymond Green gets back. I think it's going to be a nice little win streak. And I think the Warriors will pull away from everybody this year. Instead of having that one team that competes with them, I think they're going to be more or less all alone. Lots more Warrior talk later today. Gary St. Jean, 8:30 a.m. on the morning show. This, though, is the pregame show presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar, where you can have coffee and pastries and hang out with product experts from all sorts of great companies. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com for dates and more information. GoldenStateLumber.com. And just to follow up on Patrick McCaw, as the 925 texter says, I will take McKinney all day over McCaw. He rebounds. He's just a better all-around player. And right now, that is true. I totally agree. I would much rather have Alphonso McKinney. I would like to see Alphonso McKinney get the start tonight. And I may talk a little bit more about that later in the show. But right now, I've been missing a lot. It's all Warriors every day, it seems like. A little Niners and Raiders mixed in. And that means I'm neglecting important stories. And that's why I have the wonderful, nice guy Steven to fill me in with picking up the pieces. Now, before we get too deep into this, I think it should be said that this is more or less a preview of next week when Nice Guy Steven takes over the mic from 5 to 6 a.m. for the week. You'll catch me in the 10 to noon slot next week. A little vacation shuffle happening. And that means Nice Guy Steven large and in charge all week long. What can we expect?
Literally picking up the pieces every day. It's just going to be five hours worth of picking up the pieces.
And this music will play in the background of all hour long.
Hour straight, every morning, 5 to 6, picking up the pieces with Steven Langford. That's what we're going to call it.
You know what, Steven? That reliability is one of the best abilities.
The best ability is reliability? That's
I've heard something like that, yes.
All right. So we got two stories from each sport. Actually, three from the NBA.
Whoa.
But we are going to stick with American sports. No what was deemed Fartgate out of the world of darts like we discussed the last time.
All right, fine.
Anyway.
I liked Fartgate, but okay.
Yesterday, we tried playing the sound for you toward the end of the show of Sean McVay going over the Bears defense, and I couldn't get it finished. I only played 20 seconds of it. But this clip is a minute long, and I know you're a Bears fan, so I just want you to hear his evaluation. Derek Papa deemed it unimpressive yesterday on Twitter, but I want you to take a listen to
it and tell me if you deem it
unimpressive.
It better be interesting, because I don't know if you've noticed, but one of the TVs in here has an old episode of what I believe to be Charmed playing, and I just found out Kaylee Cuoco was apparently on that show.
How about that?
Who knew? All right, let's hear Sean McVay.
Look at their front. Hicks is doing an excellent job. Obviously, Khalil Mack is an outstanding player, and they do move him around a little bit. You know, he's moved around where he's sometimes on the left, sometimes on the right. Leonard Floyd is a player that's gotten a lot better. You know, really, you just look at a couple years ago when I was in Washington, we played them, and you can just feel his growth and maturation. Aaron Lynch is always a guy that's made a lot of plays. And then when you look at their second level, you feel their speed. You know, you see why Roquan Smith's a top 10 pick, got a great feel in coverage. He can blitz and finish. Trevathan's been doing it for a long time. And then on the back end, I think, you know, you see all those ball skills where guys are making picks. You know, you talk about, I want to say it's 21 interceptions they have as a defense. Kyle Fuller has 6 on his own. He's got great instincts. He can play with great vision on the quarterback, and he plays with great technique. Mukamura is a guy that you've always seen. Just going back to when I was in Washington, when he was in the division with the Giants, he's a very good physical player. Bryce Callahan's gotten better at the nickel spot. And then when you look at Eddie Jackson, the instincts, the range, you know, he makes a lot of different plays, and Amos is a guy that's been doing it for a long time too. So great scheme. Coach Fangio does an excellent job.
Kolsky, react.
I think the most important thing is what you cut him off saying at the very end, that Coach Fangio does an incredible job.
The video cut off at that point. I couldn't do anything about it.
It wasn't your fault. I didn't mean to blame you. I go back and forth. I'm a little bit with Derek Papa because, look, I get it. It's reasonably impressive that he knows the whole defense offhand and can cite their skills, but also he's spent all week studying the defense and their skills, and if he couldn't list 11 guys and what they're good at, he wouldn't be the best offensive head coach, arguably, in the game right now. I think it is not shocking. It is evidence of part of what makes him so good, which is he's very prepared. But I think, as we said last time we saw Sean McVay do some weird memory stuff, I would be shocked if Kyle Shanahan couldn't do the same thing for you right now with the Broncos defense.
100%. I agree with you. Anyway, right. Next story. Zeke Elliott. He had a touchdown against the Redskins, mm-hmm. and of course his celebration was throwing a $21, I believe it was $21, into the Salvation Army bucket. Then the league deemed Elliott's touchdown celebration unsportsmanlike and docked him $13,369. Now, I want you to react to his reaction.
I mean, didn't really expect a fine. Really don't care about the fine. It's all for a good cause. You know, I mean, we're trying to bring awareness to Salvation Army. And the NFL doesn't like that, then, I mean, that's on them. I'll pay a little fine.
I love the reaction, particularly the line, I'll pay their little fine. Because this is a classic case, and boy, do I mean classic. Because this is, if one thing is on brand for the National Football League, it is a failure to see the forest through the trees. And is there not just someone in the room to say, you know what, guys, maybe we don't ding him $13K for donating? Because here's what I learned. I was on Twitter, and I saw the Zeke celebration the one day, and then a couple days later, I think it was, who was it that put $23 in? It might have been a defensive back, actually. Maybe not, though, because he had $23 in his sock.
I'd have to look that up.
It's someone who wears 23, right? Zeke put in 21 for his number. Someone put in 23 for their number. And my joke on Twitter was, if you really want to impress me with your Salvation Army celebration, pull out a $23,000 check and drop it in there. But then I found out that Zeke Elliott is matching donations to the Salvation Army. I don't know the exact process, but he's doing a donation match thing that he was trying to draw attention to with that celebration. And I'm not here to tell you Zeke Elliott's the best guy in the world. We obviously have some evidence that he's not. However, he's doing a good thing, and he made a fun celebration out of it. And I thought we made celebrations legal. So what are we doing? What is the point here? And so he had the perfect response. Because, you know what? For Zeke Elliott, $13K, basically a drop in the bucket. It's not a big deal. But it's just another case where the NFL is choosing to look bad when they could have just been totally uninvolved. And you take an extra step to make yourself look stupid. It's classic NFL behavior.
Well, at least we're going on to the MLB then, as we pick up the baseball pieces. Tim Tebow is starting out the 2019 season on the AAA Syracuse Chiefs, which is the Mets AAA organization.
Oh, God.
The general manager says if he's the best offensive player at the time, he will be in the Mets lineup come 2019. Are you surprised?
And if you had told me 2 years ago that in 2019 Tim Tebow might be a major leaguer, I would have called you an idiot. But now I'm not surprised, because he was a legitimately productive double-A hitter. And he's getting up there age-wise, and he's probably a DH, so I don't know how well he really works for the Mets. But do I expect to see Tim Tebow, Major League Baseball player, in the next 2 years? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I don't know why you wouldn't. He's that good of an athlete, man. And he's, again, he's been a legitimately productive double-A power hitter. And power is the most valuable hitting skill in baseball right now. So, yeah, he'll be in the majors.
He's also an outfielder, so power-hitting outfielders are what people want.
Sure he's an outfielder.
The A's have expressed interest in signing free agent starting pitcher Clay Buchholz, a source told NBC Sports California. Your thoughts?
My thoughts?
Cornucopia of color combinations.
I miss Vince. That's my main thought. And Ken. No shade. I miss Vince and Ken. I don't know if it's going to be Clay Buchholz. I think he's in a nice zone for the A's of a guy with, I think, at least a couple all-star appearances in his career, who's also had some tough times, particularly from, I don't know, it was not great from 2014 through 2017. Last season, very good in 16 starts for the Diamondbacks, 2.01 ERA. And yet, at age, what is he, going to be 34 with a few bad years in his last four or five, might not be as expensive as a guy like Patrick Corbin, who was just signed for way out of the A's price range. So if Buchholz stays in the A's price range, I think he could be really nice. Clearly, they've got work to do this offseason because not a one of the guys who started for them in the playoffs, besides Liam Hendricks, as Steven pointed out to me earlier, none of the actual starters are on the roster. Now, you might bring back Edwin Jackson or Trevor Cahill. I'm pretty sure Fiers is not coming back after being non-tendered. And I don't know. I understand you're going to build your rotation out of young guys, but after what you saw from the lineup last year, expecting continued development from some of the young future superstars on the A's roster, I want to have somebody I'm a little more confident in, who with a little more veteran experience, who's not coming off Tommy John surgery at the top of that rotation. And I'm not sure Edwin Jackson or Trevor Cahill, all what's the word, credit, power, whatever, to what they did last year, more power to them. I'm not sure either of them are that guy you want at the top of your rotation steadying the young arms. So I do think you're looking at adding a starter, and I think Buchholz would be great. Some other names I've seen in their range, because it's not going to be someone in the Corbin range. It's not going to be Dallas Keuchel. But in addition to Clay Buchholz rumors, a couple of Oakland guys. Tyson Ross, you remember him, started his career with the A's. Bad for the Padres, pretty good in the second half with St. Louis. And even though I don't know how confident I am in his ability to be a consistently high-level starter, if he would come for the right money, CC Sabathia would be awesome. Oakland kid, rooted in Oakland, as they've been saying, and a guy who's been through the wars and has the bona fides, even if he's not an ace right now, I think he would be a steadying presence in a young rotation. And who better to have around a whole bunch of young pitchers than a guy like CC Sabathia? So that's the guy I would actually be looking at if I was the A's. Should be an exciting winter meetings, though.
Should be. Got two more stories.
All right.
From the NBA, from Joe Varden of The Athletic, LeBron James would like to get Carmelo Anthony to L.A. with him on the Lakers.
Oh, boy, man. I don't know what to think. Is Varden one of the guys who always has LeBron news? I feel like he is.
Probably.
So that's probably real. That's probably straight from the mouth of LeBron James. But you can't let players run your team, man. I honestly believe that's how Melo ended up in Houston. Is Chris Paul, his close personal friend, was like, "No, I can't believe Melo's washed. You got to give him a chance." So they gave him a chance. Guess what? He's washed. LeBron, Carmelo must be a great friend, because Chris Paul wanted him in Houston after watching him struggle for years. Apparently LeBron wants him in LA after watching him struggle for years. And here's the thing, if Carmelo would do the one or two things he can still do at a high level in the NBA, he'd be valuable. If he'd come off the bench, knock down some open shots, hold the ball, That would all benefit a bench unit. He could be an effective player. He could. But he won't do it. Hasn't done it. Has not been willing to do it. So I don't know. I don't know why you'd want to do it. And my bad, everybody. CC Sabathia did sign a one-year follow-up with the Yankees. I missed that.
Oh, how about that?
It was a month ago.
Wow.
Sorry. I guess Tyson Ross is the hometown name you're going to have to look at. Jeremy Hellickson, another guy the A's could consider.
So, last story.
All right.
Kevin Durant, of course, made comments recently about the environment surrounding LeBron. He threw out the word toxic there, and everyone went crazy. Then Jalen Rose on GetUp said, "Durant's really giving an invitation to other superstar players and poisoning the well. He's basically planting a seed, saying, 'Hey, Kawhi Leonard, hey, Anthony Davis, y'all don't want to go play with LeBron and play second fiddle, So he's just putting it out there as a kind of hate. That's really what it is. It's a level of jealousy and a level of hating. I'm really surprised he went there because they seem to have a really good relationship.
Okay. I love Jalen Rose. I do. I was a fan of his playing career, and I have been a great fan of his post-playing career. Truly. I hate this. I hate it, and I think it's atypical. Well, in a way, it does fit with what Jalen does, which is a lot of tea leaf reading and telling you what NBA players often really mean. But I just think, Jalen aside, there is this persistent effort, and maybe that's too strong. Maybe effort is too strong, but there is a persistent pattern of people, if not deliberately, at least obtusely, misunderstanding and misinterpreting Kevin Durant. And it's happening all over the place. Jalen Rose is just one example. It's just one example. But I may ask you to read what he said again, Stephen, because I want to read what Kevin Durant actually said. Here's what it is. So much hype comes from being around LeBron from other people. He has so many fanboys in the media, even the beat writers just fawn over him. I'm like, we're playing basketball here, and it's not even about basketball at certain points. So I get why anyone wouldn't want to be in that environment because it's toxic, especially when the attention is BS attention or fluff. It's not LeBron's fault at all. It's just the fact you have so many groupies in the media that love to hang on every word. Just get out of the way and let us play basketball. Now, that is not realistic from Kevin Durant. And he knows somewhere in his brain, on an intellectual level, he knows that the BS attention, the fluff, ultimately is good for everyone's wallets. That's interest. Fluff is interest. If people are desperate to write another story about LeBron James, it's because people are interested in reading stories about LeBron James. So this all is positive about the league. But also, it's a sincere comment from Durant about the non-LeBron things that affect playing with LeBron. And what is he really saying? What he's really saying is, when you play with LeBron, and corollary, when you play with the best team in basketball, as the Warriors have been during Kevin Durant's tenure, it's a crazy media fishbowl. And so when he says it's toxic about the LeBron environment, he's also talking about the Warriors. And it's not because the Warriors' locker room is bad or because Draymond Green yelled at him one time. It's because what Kevin Durant doesn't like is exactly what Jalen Rose and so many other people did today and yesterday, which is taking what he said, removing it from context, pulling out the part that doesn't fit their narrative, and then repeating it in misleading ways. It happens constantly. It's bad media behavior. It's not journalism, but if it was an attempt, it's a horrible failure. And I can imagine it's annoying. And if you're, say, Kevin Love, and you're playing alongside LeBron James, every little thing you say and do is going to be dissected at a higher level because there's so much interest in LeBron. And 510 Texter, you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm not, of course, what Kevin Durant said is happening. What I'm saying is his idea, just get out of the way and let us play basketball, that's not realistic. That's what I'm saying. What he said about the toxic environment is exactly true. And yes, I am talking about it right now. It's my job. That's what the media does. We cover stuff. Sports media covers sports. And generally, the media, because we live in a capitalist country where people reading, listening, paying attention pays the bills, what we try to do is talk about stuff people are interested in. And people are desperately interested in LeBron James and in the NBA at large. So the media getting out of the way and just letting them play basketball, it's not going to happen. And I think Kevin Durant knows that. But that doesn't change my point, which is he's right about the toxic environment. And he was extremely clear that it's not about LeBron. Everything he said, so much hype comes from being around LeBron from other people. It's very clear. Quote, it's not LeBron's fault at all. That should be it. And for Jalen Rose, who I think knows better, to go on TV and make it seem like, no, no, trust me, this is Kevin Durant throwing secret shots at LeBron. I don't think so. I don't think it is. It doesn't sound like it when you read the whole quote. And it's bamboozling to me. And I can imagine infuriating to Kevin Durant that people consistently take stuff he says. He seems to be one of the most honest and forthcoming and forthright guys in the league. You ask him a question, he more or less gives you an honest answer. And I can imagine it being very frustrating that every honest answer you give is somehow twisted into some sort of weird, petulant, childish behavior. Can't he just be an adult who answers questions honestly? I just don't get it. And if you ask him about the environment in LA around LeBron, and the answer he gives is, yeah, it's hard because your sort of clickbaity reporting creates a toxic environment. And then what happens is the media takes it out of context, turns it into clickbait, and proves his point. You're proving his point. When you take what he said out of context, this is the BS he's talking about. And if you're saying, well, yeah, then the Warriors environment is toxic too. Yes, that's what he's saying. He's saying all the environments where you have lots of attention, it gets toxic because it's a bunch of BS going on. It's a bunch of fluff. And he's right. And for media members to pretend like he's a child or he's acting irresponsibly or, oh, there goes Kevin Durant being sensitive again. No, it's Kevin Durant giving honest answers to your questions, which you're always saying you want. Why won't they give honest answers? And then Kevin Durant does, and oh, he's too sensitive. I'm annoyed. Joe Lo and Dibs starts right now.